I allude.
Just So Jables.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Just So Jables film podcast with me, Jables.
And me, our kid.
And me, Mwadib. Mwadib, Mwadib. We're getting some feedback. Hang on a minute. So, the wading modules.
Ben's a little bit overexcited about this week, I think. Well, here on the Just So Jables film podcast, we like to watch a film, give you a hot take straight out of the cinema. As you probably know by now, if you got this far and you listen to us, then you probably know what's going on. This week, we are going to be watching Dune Part 2. I refuse to call it Part 2. I was nearly did, though.
I nearly did.
I was like, don't do it. But before we get onto that, how did we do with our reviews last week? Which was, let me think, Madam Web, wasn't it? I can't see we would be far off, yeah. But carry on.
So Madam Web was, I think it's fair to say, universally panned, even by its stars. Sydney Sweeney mocked it on Saturday Night Live. Dakota Johnson's been doing the rounds boasting that she hasn't seen it. It's got a 13% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes, 58% audience score, so a bit of disparity. The Guardian gave it one star and called it a tangled mess. YouTube has been pretty merciless, I think it's fair to say. My favourite YouTuber on it was Robot Head. I don't know if you ever watched Robot Head's videos. He does a lot of Star Wars.
I think I might
criticism,
yeah.
Australian, funny. And he suggested that if you watch it with the understanding that Cassie is a Terminator sent back from the future, it makes a lot more sense. He said the line delivery, the choices of what to say, the knowing the future and being in the right place at the right time, her genuine confusion when interacting with other people, things like her not being able to comprehend what a child's thank you card is.
Yeah.
Knowing this makes it much more fun to watch.
Okay, can I just say thanks a bunch, Robot Head, because now we've got to watch the film again.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, is it? You said you'd watch it again, though.
I think I would, but yeah. Knowing this, I think I'll watch it even more amusedly now.
Yeah, But no, it was bad. I keep thinking, I actually spoke to someone today at work who said they watched it and didn't think it was that bad, and I...
Put them straight.
I didn't put them straight. I refuse to do that. I'm not going to be that guy. But I was surprised. But, you know, I guess if you're going in, like, brain out, just not that bothered about it, then you might think it's okay. I don't think they said it was that good. It was just fine. No, I stand by everything we said last week. I don't think it was a good film. Yeah, I don't even think it's interesting enough to watch it as Dakota Johnson Terminator. So, Ben?
I don't really feel anything about this film, but I don't think I dislike it as much as you guys. But I think that's partly because you know a bit more about the whole...
I don't think it matters.
For me, though, that's only in the sense that I don't want to watch any of those types of films ever again.
Agree to agree.
Okay.
Well, while we're agreeing on everything, why don't you tell us what you're on about this week, our kid?
I'm just going to touch on Retro Reels. Okay. Because we did say that we were going to announce... So, March's Retro Reels is going to be... Ba-ba-ba-ba! Aliens!
Nice.
That's Aliens with an S.
With an S.
The first one. Yeah, we've had a couple of people ask what it is.
Yeah.
Laura got in touch on Twitter and said, is it going to be Ghostbusters Interview with the Vampire or Terminator?
Yeah.
So I said, well, we've already done Terminator.
Terminator, yeah.
There's a possibility it could be Terminator 2.
It could be, one day maybe.
But no, Aliens.
Okay, so you're worried now because someone had said, is it going to be Ghostbusters? And it's not going to be Ghostbusters.
We're going to get into Ghostbusters for sure. But no, I think, you know, I'm definitely up for this. I'm really looking forward to watching it. Well, obviously we'll get into it on that episode. Yeah. And we're watching its special edition as well, isn't it?
It is, yes.
So it's not the original theatrical one. What I would say is the pinnacle version of... Pinnacle version? Is that a thing?
What was it you said?
Oh, yeah. I came in and...
Definitive.
Announced that we had secured... the special edition, which is David Cameron's favourite cut of Aliens.
Yeah, it is.
And I was like, David Cameron?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, David Cameron. Yeah, yeah.
Now tell us what you actually mean.
James Cameron.
James Cameron, yeah.
1991 special edition.
So in a clumsy roundabout way, that's what I'm on about.
Wow.
What are you on about, Ben?
Talking about clumsy roundabout things, I'm on about a film we watched last night on Amazon, which is Freelance. I'm not particularly excited to tell you about this. It's just the most recent film I've seen.
Okay.
I don't think it made it to the cinema, so I don't know if it's like an Amazon original or something like that. The equivalent in the old school, in old money, straight to video kind of thing. It's kind of an action comedy with John Cena as an ex-military special forces guy / lawyer. It has this long rambling expositional thing about his background. You know, when it's like scenes with someone voicing over, and then I did this, and then I tried this, and that didn't work, and this didn't work out, so I joined the army. what a crazy guy I am. He ends up kicked out of the army due to an injury, and he goes back to being like a small town lawyer doing rubbish jobs like, you know, helping people do PPI claims and that kind of thing. And then his old mate Christian Slater gives him a call and goes, ah, I've got a job for you doing like special private military army type things, security in South America. Oh, and you've got to guard a woman who's a journalist. It's about as predictable as you might expect.
Yeah.
It's one of those where you're not quite sure whether it was supposed to be a comedy or an action film, because it doesn't really do either of them very well. But for a Sunday afternoon, it was fine. What else can I tell you about it? It's got Alison Brie in it.
Okay.
And they end up in this fake sort of fictional South American country. And he's supposed to be looking after this woman journalist where she's doing an interview with the despotic autocratic president of the country, who turns out not to be quite who you think he is. And then there's a coup, and he's, you reminded me of Rylan.
Yeah.
He's like a South American Rylan.
The teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was actually my favorite character in it. But
yeah. I haven't written his name down, so I don't know who that was, but apparently it was in Narcos. But just very mediocre, generic stuff. That's what I'm on about. If you're really bored and it's free on Amazon, maybe
watch
it.
And you really like John Cena?
I do like John Cena, but...
Yeah, I do too. But it's not his finest hour or hour and a half.
Anyway, that's me, Jables.
Well, we went to the cinema Saturday night in Bury and watched Wicked Little Letters.
Oh, I fancy that.
Yeah. Yeah, I watched the trailer. We both sort of said on the way in, we're not sure if it's going to actually be good or bad. It's hard to judge from the trailer. It looked like, not sure what to expect. I had that feeling of it's either going to be really good or really bad. And it wasn't. It was kind of somewhere in between. So it stars Jesse Buckley, Olivia Colman, Timothy Spall.
Is he the new Jim Broadbent?
Pretty much.
I thought that was Toby Jones.
Maybe they fight over it.
Maybe they do. Yeah. Maybe they're the same person.
Spall and Toby Jones having a fight.
Yeah. And it's based on, it's that thing where it really outlines it's based on a real story, but bits are made up and they kind of make it clear that it's made up. I'm trying to say something clever, I can't remember how they put it. It's set in the 1920s after the war. Edith and people in the local area, Edith's Olivia Colman, are receiving kind of poison pen letters, sweary letters from a mystery source, and she accuses her neighbour, Rose, which is the Jesse Buckley character, of sending the letters. And then there's lots of hijinks. It turns into a bit of a whodunit kind of and why done it. And there's some almost like heisty kind of japery. It's weird because it's based on real events, but then they put this kind of like farcical, almost slapstick comedy into it, which makes it a little bit disjointed for me. It wasn't bad. It was good. And like the performances are good. I really like Jessie Buckley.
Yeah, I like Jessie Buckley.
She's really good. She's funny in it and quite endearing. But there's things that are happening in it that you're almost, while you're watching it, going, well, that can't have been part of it. Mm. You know, that it's just like, it doesn't make sense that would make sense. And it was one of these stories where I as soon as I watched it, I thought, okay, what's the actual story? And I found this article from like 2018, because I think this is based on a book that someone wrote in 2018 about it, when it happened. And then it goes into like some of the psychology and like how it reflected the times, and it was more interesting than this kind of joke. They make it out like it's people are sending funny letters. Isn't it funny that people have started swearing and, you know, in letters, and people saying stuff they shouldn't be saying and in letters. And there was a bit at the end where it got to it. I won't say it, because you'll probably watch it at some point, I'm sure. Where someone has a rant, and everyone in the cinema started laughing, thought it was hilarious. I mean, we kind of sat there and going, A, it wasn't that funny, and B, it was almost like a little bit sad at that point.
Okay.
It was almost like someone was breaking down. But because of like the way the film was presented to you, it was like, oh, well, it's farcical and funny. So, but it wasn't at that point. And I felt like it would have been more meaningful if it wasn't. It seemed like the action, you know, it was almost actually a little bit sad what was happening.
Yeah.
And that reading about the real story, there's a lot of commentary on, you know, talking about, they're almost saying like when people started swearing in public life was around that time, because it was after the war. It was common parlance. And the judges and just like the world adjusting to like, you know, women's rights and things. Mm. And it was an interesting kind of thing. But the film wasn't that interesting.
Oh, what a shame.
Which is annoying. And it had bits that were like slapstick. And I found those bits annoying. And some of the characters annoying, because I'm just thinking, I know it's a different time, but certain things just didn't feel right. So yeah, that's me. I'm, you know.
Oh, what a shame. So was it that the story was actually more interesting than the film?
Yeah, definitely. And it sounds harsh. It was still enjoyable. I still enjoyed it. I still liked watching it. It wasn't a bad film. You know, it was better than fine. It was good. It was a fun watch, but it also seemed to, it wasn't as good as it should have been, but it wasn't terrible. So okay. Yeah, that's me.
Sounds like Midsummer Murders to me.
Yeah, yeah. There
anyway,
we go.
Which brings us neatly on to this week's film.
You really, he really wants to get on.
Ben's taking over.
Ben, why don't you
skipping ahead?
Why don't you tell us first how people can get in touch with the show if they want to talk about what they've been watching?
Okay, well, you can get us on social media at Just So Jables, Facebook, Instagram, and X, or you can email us hello@justsojables.com.
Excellent.
That's all I'm giving you this week.
Boom. Nice.
Boom. So, well, at this point in the show, we should probably hand it over to you, Ben. Why don't you take it from here?
Just So Ben.
Just So Ben.
Shai Halud. We're watching Dune Part 2.
Tell us all about it, Ben. Tell us how we got to this point. I don't think we probably would be talking a lot afterwards, I think.
Yeah, we don't need to say too much ahead of the film, I don't think. I mean,
we recap Dune 1, no?
We all know the story. Like, Dune 1, the Atreides family are sent to Arrakis to look after the spice mining. Ostensibly, the spice is, it's all very political.
The
spice is a very valuable commodity, which enables people to kind of have visions and travel through space at high speed by folding space and bits and pieces like that. But they've booted out the mean Harkonnen family. Yeah, they seem to be Harkonnens now, not Harkonnens. They've been booted out. They're not very happy about it, but it's like, well, have they really been booted out? Or is there something fishy going on with the Emperor because he's like doing power games and stuff like that?
No, they hadn't been booted out. And yes, there was something fishy going on.
Yes, indeed. So that's the end of story one. And they all have to run for their lives and bits and pieces. And Duke Leto gets killed and Dr. Yu is being an asshole. And they escape into the desert and go and hang out with the Fremen. So now we're about to spend 2 hours and 46 minutes hanging out with the Fremen. So we're going to hang out in the desert with Paul Atreides and Lady Jessica, and Jessica Fletcher might be there.
Yeah, excellent.
That would be awesome.
Can you imagine?
She'd probably see her jogging past with a sweat
around her neck.
Sweat around her neck.
Yeah, and later on she'd play like a drunk Fremen just to get some information out of somebody.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Love it.
I still think it's a good film. I haven't rewatched it for a while. We did briefly consider watching it before this and decided against it. Just ran out of time.
Okay.
And when it was on at the Corn Exchange, we were watching something else at the Corn Exchange.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
You made it out like it was some big conscious decision. No, I really want to take it in like as a fresh thing. Yeah, yeah. It's like, no.
But also that, in retrospect, that's probably why. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if I need to say much more than that other than, so we're going to be seeing maybe some other characters this time around. So we've got Fade Rauther popping up in this, played by Austin Butler, who used to be Elvis.
Yeah.
So he's the nephew of the Baron Harkonnen, and obviously played by Sting in the 1985 David Lynch film. How they're going to beat that Sting in leather pants in a jet of steam, I don't know.
Who knows?
Don't know. Doesn't look like that's happening from the trailer.
It doesn't.
No.
I think, who else? I think we've got Christopher Walken in this as the Emperor.
Yeah, that looks kind of cool. Aquaman's dead, isn't he?
Oh, he's Duncan, isn't he?
Yeah.
Duncan dead. Does die.
But
does he come back as a ghost?
Yeah, I think he does ghost stuff.
Are you thinking of Gurney?
I might be.
Josh Brolin's Gurney.
Yeah.
He comes back because he kind of wanders out into the desert fighting and stuff.
Doesn't he end up marrying his sister or something?
I don't think so.
Doesn't Duncan's ghost marry Paul Atreides' sister?
Ooh. Isn't there a whole clone
thing? I'm sure that's what happens.
Yeah, maybe.
Spoilers.
Not in the film.
Not in the film. No. But later on in the story.
Okay.
I thought you said there was a whole clone thing. I thought we got onto this before. And isn't there clones of Duncan and stuff that come back?
Yeah, there might be. Yeah. Oh, I can't remember now.
We're going super advanced. We're going into like book 3 or 4 or something.
Yeah, so I guess, I mean,
people we know about in this film. Go on, mate.
Alia, Paul's sister, is kind of in this, I guess. But only in kind of visions of the future. I think she's played by Anna Taylor-Joy, but just in cameo. Maybe she's uncredited.
I was hoping for a creepy
spoiler,
little girl
I knew
again.
Nothing about this. But, yeah.
I'd seen her in the trailers.
Well, she's just on the cast list.
I really liked Alia in the original film because she's really creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And cool.
Come to me, Baron.
Wait for my brother, Baron.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, sort of hog the floor, but that's your information. We kind of know what's going to happen. They're just going to scuffle about in the desert fighting people.
Yeah, there's plenty to come, Ben, I think. Yeah. I think they're going to expand on it quite a lot. Because in the film, this is probably like the last third of the original film. Is it going to be three films in total, this part? Is it going to be three parts?
That's what I've heard, but that was just a brief Google.
I can't imagine that they're not going to expand into other parts of the story. There's some big cast names who are playing what are really side characters in what is the original film, but are important to later stories, aren't they? So Florence Pugh's in this, isn't she? She's Princess
Irulan.
Yeah, who is quite significant, but barely in the David Lynch film, is she?
She does the intro at the beginning.
Yeah, but that's it. She does it, and then she stands next to her dad.
But she's still cool, because she's Helen out of Candyman, so...
Yeah, she's cool. It's just... I'm looking forward to seeing which way the story goes. What I don't want it to be is just, like, stalled. Just, a filler. I don't want lots of people running around and fighting just for the sake of it. I want expanding story as well, if that's what they're doing. Because it's a long film for what is, I guess in the original film, a lot of it's done in time jumps, isn't it? There's a lot of time skips and almost like a Paul Atreides training montage.
That's true, yeah. You see him training up the troops and getting used to the weirding modules and all that kind of stuff.
We haven't even seen weirding modules or anything. I don't know if they even exist in this. Will they exist in this, Ben?
I don't know. I don't see how they can't. We'll see.
Final thought on it. We, in the cinema in Bury, we were watching, as I said before, Wicked Little Letters. Dune Part 2 was on in the big cinema in there. There's a lot of bass in this film.
Right.
There's a lot of loud bits coming, just so you know. You won't hear any sound from other cinemas at certain parts. I know that for facsies, but which is good. I like a big, bassy, boomy fight scenes and stuff.
Yeah, I guess there'll also be a lot of quiet, whispery bits as well, which I'm slightly worried about, but we'll see.
We'll see.
Our kid?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. One of the things that stood out with the first film was that the visuals were amazing. I think it'll be the same in this. I hope that won't be all it is, because in the trailer, there's obviously lots of big visuals with the Fremen in the desert. Like you, I hope it will be story-driven. I hope it won't just be, wow, that looks really cool for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. I think we're going to get into it quite a lot when we get back. I haven't really got much more to add. We'll let Ben finish this segment, I think, and we'll give it a deep dive when we get back.
Cool.
Yeah, should be good.
And we're back from the Corn Exchange. But full disclosure, it's the next day because we finished rather late in the end, didn't we?
We did.
And
we folded space.
Yeah. We folded space and came here the next day. I'd love to say that I had lots of time to do lots of research and make us seem really clever. But no, it's exactly the same. It's been a busy day. And it's still kind of fresh takes. Just maybe with a extra few hours thought, I suppose, going into it. How does that?
Yeah, that'll do. I haven't given it much more thought, though.
Have you not?
No. Well, we've had a busy day as well.
Yeah, okay. A few hours thought might be stretching it.
Yeah.
An extra 3 or 4 minutes thought.
Yeah. All right, Larkid, give us a synopsis then.
I have done a little synopsis while I was waiting for you this evening.
Yeah.
So Dune 2 picks up at the end of the first film with Paul Atreides and his mother Jessica allying with the desert Fremen to wage war on the evil Harkonnens and potentially bring prosperity back to Arrakis. Now, obviously, it's a lot more complex than that, with prophecies and power struggles and the potential to start a holy war. But it's probably too complex to spoil, so we'll leave it at that for now, if that's okay.
Yeah, I think there's some specific spoilers, I think, that we will ignore or go around.
There's a bit of a reveal, twisty reveal.
A couple of twisty reveals, I'd say. But we'll talk themes and stories and see how we get on, shall we? I think we should probably start with the super fan in the room.
Mr. June himself.
Mr. June, Mr. Muad'Dib himself. That's me.
Come on, Ben, start us off.
How do I start you off? Well, let's just give instant reactions. I think it was really good. So if you are listening to this and wondering about whether to go, you should definitely go. Lengthwise, 2 hours, 46 minutes. I think we're all maybe slightly worried about that going into it. I don't think it felt overly long. We'll get into that in a bit. We might have slightly different opinions on that. It's quite a subtle film, I would say. I mean, we were saying that last night whilst we watched the credits. If you compare it to the original 1985 David Lynch film, which of course I will, it's quite a different film in that it's quite measured. It's quite gentle. I say gentle. I mean, there's a lot of action in it. There's a lot of crashing around and running around. But it takes its time.
Yeah, that's fair.
But not in a bad way. Other instant thoughts on it are, you could go in to watch this film, and if you were like hyper cynical, which is my tendency, there are bits where you might be like, that's ridiculous, that looks silly. And objectively, parts of it are, but it still works. And I'm trying to, I can't quite put my finger on why. So that's probably quite a rambling.
I think I can put my finger on why. I think just because it was of a very high standard and it was really good quality. The visuals were really good, the audio, the performances, the story and everything. Now, I feel slightly differently towards it than you do because I did really like it on that basis, but I don't think that I felt it as much. I enjoyed it objectively, but I didn't go home thinking about it and reviewing my thoughts on it. I just thought it was really, really good quality. It was objectively a very good thing.
Okay.
That's my view. No, I've got more, but we'll come on to that as we go through our thoughts. Yeah.
So is it worth just setting the scene a bit, as we did before we went off? Like, this is the bit where Paul and Jessica are in the desert with the Fremen, and he's figuring out who he is and what he's going to be. And the Fremen are there, and some of them are a bit surly, some of them are a bit quirky, some are a bit weird. And that is the majority of the film. Then it does go into a bit of action. I'm sure we'll get into that. And it goes, and it switches across to scenes with, we'll talk about the Emperor, we'll talk about the Harkonnens, or Harkonnens as they're now known, apparently. But yeah, Jables, I'm interested in your opinions at this point.
Wow, this is a first.
Asking for it.
Wow. I really liked it. I thought it works. And I think it works for the reasons you said, Arkid, but also just how it's been put together. I think it feels like it's been done right. It carries on from the previous film. It doesn't feel like it has to double down or do anything. You know, it's not like it's another film where they're raising the stakes, even though because the stakes are fairly high anyway. It doesn't feel like they're going, right, we've done this in the first one, now we're going to throw this at you. It actually feels like a continuation of the previous story. And that's why I think it works and it's strong. I have a couple of things that I'll come on to again later on, which are, well, they're kind of negatives. They're, you know, my kind of gripes with it, I would say. Not necessarily bad things, but things that I'd like to have seen done a bit better. It's definitely worth watching in the cinema, I would say straight off the bat. If you haven't seen the first film, I think you'd struggle.
Yeah.
Because
it does continue the story, doesn't it?
Almost straight after, to the point of it. I've seen the previous film twice, but last time was probably about 9 months ago. Even then, when it first started, I was like, "Ooh, who's that again?"
Yeah.
When you see, and then a very quick, "Oh yeah, that's because of so and so." You know, and I've seen the original loads of times, so it was just that kind of shock introduction. But quickly got back into it. It has similar visual styles. I think somehow they've managed to get the sound even better in this one. I like the sound in the previous version, but it's loud, but it's this resonance to the film in the audio.
Definitely.
There's a sound, the music is great that plays along. It's maybe not as iconic as the original score, but that's just because we've heard it lots of times and, you know, we've walked around going, you know.
Some of us have the CD.
Yeah, for years. But it has got some earworms that kind of stick in there. And as you're watching it, you felt yourself not being jarred by it. You were just kind of going along with with that.
Yeah.
So, no, sound visually, I really liked how it looked. I know there's been, isn't there some like filming, because it was filmed in IMAX, but what did I remember reading about it beforehand? I think it was filmed in IMAX. But, you know, with digital screens, you often get that kind of uncanny valley or the when something's been filmed digitally and massively processed, like, I don't know, like The Hobbit, it kind of seems hyper-real or unreal when it's so digital. It can take you out of it. Whereas I know in this what they did, they filmed it in IMAX. And then what they'd done, they then transferred that to 35mm film and then redigitized it from the film layer. So you get that. It's not a haziness. It's not like putting Vaseline on the lens and doing that. But there's a graininess not to affect the visual quality.
Yeah.
Just it gives it a film quality rather than, you know what you two are like with motion smoothing on TVs.
Well, yeah, because like this film could have been a CGI nightmare.
Yeah.
But somehow they escaped that.
Yeah. And I think it's because of those processes, how they're doing that. Massively so. You know, we haven't even touched on performances yet and people. So, you know, the visuals are awesome. The sound is great. But people are committing to this film when they're acting it.
Yeah.
You know, not in a bad way, in a good way. They're not hamming it. They're just, you can see they're obviously committed and want to do a good job of this.
You don't know
if that is because they're super fans or it is.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because objectively, like I was saying a couple of minutes ago, objectively, you could look at the script and you could sit and watch a particular scene and like So, for example, like the use of subtitles. So you've got actors talking what's presumably a made-up Fremen Dune language for quite a lot of this film. That could be awful.
Yeah.
And hammy and weird and like just, you could be smirking at it, but somehow you're not. And I think maybe that is because of the performances, like people have really committed to it.
Mm.
Like you said, not in a hammy way. Somehow they've picked a cast that all got behind it.
Yeah. I mean, Timothy Chalamet, even though there's not a shift in him, he seems to have elevated himself a little bit more in this film as well. He's not just a youngster doing stuff. You start to feel that actually this could be the person that people follow. He doesn't feel like a kid, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
And Zendaya, Chani, brilliant. I was worried that she could be annoying. I guess just based on other films, based on the trailer, what was that, Wimbledon or yeah. tennis trailer?
Yeah.
Just
oh
based
Champions
on stuff,
or
Champions
something.
Or just based yeah. on stuff like that, I had that kind of worry going in. It couldn't be any different. I thought she was brilliant in it, actually. I thought she was one of the strongest characters in it. We'll get onto differences probably later on between this, maybe not specifics, but there are differences in this film to previous films. And I think they work. And I think she plays that off so well that I just found people believable. Yeah. Rebecca Ferguson, I said after that, she was, it's a weird character. It's completely different to what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
She's menacing. She's quite nasty.
She's
so calculated. And.
But by the end, I think both Jessica and Paul are really interesting characters because they're not just good, are they? They are flawed and they're manipulative.
Yeah.
And he's not just a classic hero, is he? And I think going into the third film, it's going to be really interesting to see what then happens with Paul and Jessica. Particularly, they were the main points of interest to me as characters. I did really like Javier Bardem's character.
He was still Gar.
He was so funny, but also gritty. And he was... Yeah. He was almost like the everyman character driving the profit idea, wasn't he? You got behind it because he was behind it.
Yeah.
And that thing of, he is the profit. I'm not the prophet. Ah, the prophet is humble.
Yeah, I know.
You are
it was really funny.
And I just, it was so good.
It was a little bit Life of Brian almost,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Was. I kind it of could I have liked... been really snarky funny, but it wasn't.
But
it was knowingly funny.
It was knowingly funny. And it was actually nice to have a little bit of brevity like that as well.
Yeah.
Like it could have, because it could have been really dour and super serious at every moment.
Stilgar in the original film is super serious.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's still serious, but it's.
And he's quite scary at times.
No,
when he
is.
Tells. You know, talks to Jessica about the new Reverend Mother. It's that or it's the water, which, you know.
I know,
which,
it's brilliant. Yeah, it's really good. And he's like, not jovial, but kind of, it's just so matter of fact. It just does it with a smile and it's,
He's very cool.
Yeah, very cool.
I liked Fade. I know we'll probably come to talk about the Harkonnen a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I wasn't expecting masses from Austin Butler. I don't know why, really. That's perhaps a little bit unfair. I think I found him a little bit bland in the Elvis film.
Yeah.
So I think I was expecting to find him quite bland in this. But I think he played the part well. He had a kind of knowingness to Fade that he wasn't just a one-dimensional baddie.
No.
Again, I think there was a bit more...
thought to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Just trying to think about the Harkonnen stuff in this film. We've got Fade in this one. He's very different to the Fade who is Sting, who is 1985 version of Fade. Very, very different. And I was a bit worried about it, but I think it still works. From the trailer, if you just watch the trailer and you're about to go and see this film, you might be worried about Fade just being a one-dimensional nutcase. He's not.
With baby skin.
Yeah. But also he's not that.
Yeah, he's
but
both,
somehow
yeah.
they kind of pull it off. There were a couple of stylistic bits around establishing his character, which I don't think 100% landed for all of us. So there's a scene where they're establishing his strength and his will and his determination or whatever in some kind of Roman style arena that I think we all think wasn't 100% nailed, both in terms of effects and how it was played out. But it was still good. It was interesting the way they did it, at least. Like, they went for this kind of weird black and white. It was almost like, and I'm guessing they were going for this a bit, old propaganda war footage, World War II stuff.
Yeah.
It all went a bit, little bit like, kind of say it like Nazi propaganda photo pathé, like reels kind of it was kind of strange. And I, when it first started doing that, I was like, oh, I'm not sure about this. And then I got into it and I was like, actually, this is quite cool.
Yeah. I think it works just in visually. I think it's supposed to generate those kind of emotions in you, isn't it? I think it works quite well, like you. I like that idea of him having to, I don't want to say any spoilers, but basically the Baron ends up testing him in those moments. Now, I wasn't completely convinced how he does it because it's set up like he's got this easy fight he's going to be having and then something gets turned against him. But even then, it felt like he still had an advantage in that whole situation anyway. It felt like no matter what was happening. But I like how afterwards there was a conversation between Fade and the Baron, and I guess I'm just saying that there's an interaction. It wasn't just a subservience. There was a bit of pushback from it. So it gave the character a bit more depth, not just, I'm a fighter, I can do this stuff. And you start seeing him taking over and doing things, which actually worked really well. And, you know, we should talk about Rabanne as well, Beast Rabanne with Dave Bautista. I actually think that worked really well. Mm. You've got this big meathead, brash, bring him over here, I can do anything. And you see a different side of that character afterwards, and not necessarily in a good way for him and other people. I just like that. I like the characterizations, but I don't think it took anything away from previous iterations as well, if that makes sense.
The only thing I'd also say, not quite negative, but on the Harkonnen side, the Baron Harkonnen kind of fades a little bit into the background in this film.
He did in the last film, though, didn't he? We weren't particularly enamored of the Baron. If I look back, I think we were quite disappointed with his
He could have been better, but he seemed quite strong at the start. And I guess you're right. I guess he does fade into the background more as the film goes.
I found generally the Harkonnens a bit too clinical for my taste. Yeah. And I know that's what they were going for with the monochrome and everything that you were talking about. But there was just something, like in the original film, and I know we shouldn't keep comparing, but blah, blah, blah. The Harkonnens, they're quite dirty and grubby and bloody.
Yeah.
And I always found that quite gross, but it's one of the things that I kind of liked about them. And that didn't really carry in this for me. I found them quite clinical. And there was a bit with Fade and Lea Seydoux's character, like a sex bit.
Yeah.
And again, that seemed very clinical and transactional, and it just didn't really feel dirty enough. And I felt like that a little bit about the Harkonnen. And with the arena scene, I liked the fighting. There were some weird kind of Silent Hill style shaped things in there that I wasn't sure about. But the crowds just looked too cartoonish for me. That was too CGI.
That was a CGI bit. And you could see how they tried to, they used obviously crowd software that makes everyone move slightly differently. But because of that, it also made it look like it wasn't real.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the fireworks, though. They've got those kind of like black...
Yeah, it looked like burns or something on the reel, didn't it? You weren't sure about that, were you?
That was my least favourite part of the whole film. Yeah, interestingly. I was like, that's just a bit weak. I don't really get that.
But yeah. In terms of new characters, yeah. So there was Austin Butler, who I liked as well. And you had Florence Pugh as Princess...
Irulan.
Who was fine and not underused, but... still a side character, it felt like. So you had this plotting and scheming from the Revenant Mothers and the, what are they called, Ben? The Bene Gesserits.
Bene Gesserits, yeah.
And I think that probably leads me on to what one of my issues. I thought the first half of this film was brilliant because it took over straight from the previous film, and it was, apart from a couple of bits that cut back and forward, it was almost primarily on Paul, Jessica, Charney, still got in the Fremen world. And I thought that was going to be the least interesting bit for me. And it was actually completely the other way around.
Yeah, same.
It was really interesting. It was really engaging. It gave it time to set it up. It didn't feel rushed. And there was a lot happening, but you were learning as you were going along. And, you know, you were learning about the belief systems and the Fremen. And there was nothing rushed. And then as the film goes, later on, there's a couple of shifts. There's some characters who pop up. Don't want to... see spoilers, just in case you don't know. And the film starts to take a shift where it then starts to become the political aspect. We need to do this to do this. And because I was enjoying the other part so much, and I could have just kept watching that development, that as it started ramping up, I found myself, I wasn't bored. And this isn't me saying it was bad. I liked the first half so much that the second half I was like, okay, this is fine. This is still good. But it then became about moving things along. And it felt like that side of it started to become a bit rushed. Not all of that, because I actually quite love that scene when they were talking in the in the chamber underground. Just like the just the visuals of that was cool, but like that scene worked well. But that would be one of my kind of like moans about
gripes.
That. What did you think about that?
The only sort of similar gripe I had was a little bit to do with the pacing, in that when it first started, it took me a while to realise that it followed straight on from the first film, because it felt to me like Paul and Jessica were quite established with the Fremen, that just the way they were behaving. And it took me a while until they got back to the camp and everyone was like, ooh, strangers. I thought, oh, it follows straight on from the first film. And that wasn't immediately clear to me to start with, but it, fair enough.
It jumped in with me because I thought they'd proved themselves to them already.
Yeah,
so it was twice.
Yeah. And then it wasn't too much longer after that Paul and Charney were together. He has a bad dream and she says, oh, you've been having that bad dream for ages now.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. And I thought, oh, well, how long have they been out fighting in the desert then?
Yeah.
So a couple of times the timings were just a bit like, I don't know how much time has passed.
Well, going back to the original story, I think he's in the desert for a number of years, isn't he? In practice, but they don't really dwell on that in the film, so you're not entirely sure, really.
No, I wasn't sure.
Feels like the film's just a few weeks, maybe.
Well, I think it's a few months because obviously Jessica's
still pregnant.
Yeah,
yeah.
But so it didn't feel like that to me, to be honest. I felt that it wasn't quite montage, but it felt like passing of time as they were doing stuff. Because, you know, jumping into that, I really like that scene when they're first attacking the harvester and the...
Yeah, I did as well.
So, you know, talking about the action stuff, there isn't tons of action, but when it happens, I think it's really well considered and actually well done. There's that scene, there's... The stuff with the sandworms is actually very cool. I'm not quite so sure about the visual of like a little guy flying across the desert. It looks a little bit odd, but it's still kind of cool. It's a bit...
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just thinking of that video that Ben sent out to us with the guy zooming around the cinema.
Yeah,
the little worm.
Yeah.
It's funny.
But
sorry.
That moment when you see Paul trying to do this for the first time, that's brilliant. I loved it.
It was good. Even though it goes on for quite a while, it's not boring at all.
No, it's kind of in your face, but it feels quite real. And when I saw that and like afterwards, I was like, cool, imagine watching that in IMAX. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Because it felt physical, I think is what it is.
It did.
It was just like sand and stuff getting thrown, you know, it's just, and it felt like it was like wafting and hitting, you know, and everything, and the sound with it, it just like...
Yeah, because in that moment, then you realise what they're trying to do with this is they're showing that Paul Atreides could die at any moment.
Yeah.
And that what he's trying to do is show that he understands that and he's willing to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to gain the trust of the Fremen, obviously.
Yeah.
So I think they do that really well, because if you go back to the original film, that's treated quite lightly, I think. Like he sets off a little thumper device and then a couple of minutes later is on top of a sandworm grinning at everybody.
Hey.
Yeah.
And you go, nee, 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 nee.
Yeah.
On this, like you say, they draw it out a bit, and it is quite tense, because it's like the sandworm doesn't know he's there.
No.
So he could just get like squashed like a bug easily.
Yeah.
And they kind of do that quite well, I think.
Yeah, and I think on that, it's that measured approach is not just in those parts. It's also, it's in the story. This is a lot about change and questioning your belief and, as you say, and prophecies and such. And I don't think I'd normally be that interested in that kind of thing. But the way they do it actually works really well. And it's not like you're a goodie and you're a baddie.
No, it's not.
You've got a group of people and it just happens to be that some of them believe and some of them don't. They're not at war with each other. They're not fighting with each other. They just don't necessarily believe. And you've got those kind of like two belief systems running alongside each other. And you can see, and I think it's why Charney and also Stilgar, you can see they are actually struggling with whether what is happening
that's
is happening.
That's true, yeah.
On that, I think that's one of a number of changes to the film. Again, without getting too specific, Charney's character is quite different. And I think that works well. Jessica and Alia, different, but actually works really well in this. There is that an argument to be said, well, you know, it would have been nice if you'd have seen more of Alia. But I don't know, I just think it actually worked quite well because of it. Because of that, there's quite a big change to a death of one of the characters in the film, where there's a big change to that. And you think, oh, I don't know if that would work. And I think it actually works better in this format. It makes more sense with what's happening. Because ultimately, even though they say it shouldn't be the case, this is partially a Paul's revenge film. This is, you know, and the fact, or not just him, Paul and Jessica's revenge. And I think that works really well. And I even like that at the end, where it's not necessarily about Paul as well. One thing I notice, he keeps the suit on, he keeps his face covered for that whole bit right up to the end. And it's not even like a big reveal of, you know, it's just like, because that's what he's become.
Yeah.
And I think that worked brilliantly. I just liked how he done that. Just something that I thought.
And Jessica's revenge is just massive, isn't it? It's like 5 games of chess ahead of everywhere you thought she was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in the book, the Bene Gesserit sisterhood, however you want to describe them, they only exist to be calculating.
Yeah.
And they go through, like, from birth, years and years and years and decades of training.
Yeah.
And I think, I suppose you could argue, in the original film, they kind of skip over that bit and make it a bit gimmicky, like the voice, because they don't use the voice very much in this film. But when they do, it's quite effective.
Yeah. Mm. They're manipulating bloodlines, aren't they? That's what they're doing. So, no, I like those parts. I thought those changes made sense. I'm interested to see how it goes as well, because there is going to be a third part, isn't there? No matter what. So I'm interested to see what happens now and how much of the source material, or because there's quite a lot still to come, isn't there?
Yeah.
If you were looking at it.
Because at the end of the first Dune, Paul is the young hero going on to, like you say, take his revenge, but take his next steps. At the end of this one, I don't really know what he is. Is he a hero? Is he a villain? And that's great, because he's so complex now that I genuinely don't know how I feel about him.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And where that actually works as well is you could do a film straight after this. You could do the same again next day. Or your next film could be 10 years later.
Mm.
And there could be a lot has happened in between time. And I think I actually like the idea of both. I like that idea of the development of both. One thing we did talk about, me and Ben, like straight after the film, is one thing I thought. There's a big battle. Let's say the big battle at the end. In the original film, if you watched that, that's like a culmination of what's happened in the film. And it's almost like a celebration. It's like the punch the air sort of moment. We're all attacking sandworms, blah, blah, blah. There's loads going on and you're like, hey, raise the flags. This is what's happening. I don't think that worked as well. It looks amazing. I don't think it worked as well in this. I didn't get that kind of like punch of what was happening. Maybe by design, it felt like it was more calculated and this is what we need to do, which makes me think this isn't the end of the story, because it was like that in that film because it felt like it was the end of that story.
It didn't feel like a cliffhanger, though, to me. I felt like it. There was a completion there. Yeah, I was worried it was going to be a bit like Fast X, literally something going off a cliff.
No, I think they did it really well. So I agree with you, Jables, but because we're obviously going to get another film, I think they've done it right that way. I think to err that on that side of not making some huge crescendo, they've left it hanging, not completely a cliffhanger, but ambiguity.
They've built it up
and then they've said, right, now you're not sure, credits.
No, I think that's fair.
So, I think both ways work.
Have you got anything else to add? What else have you got, Ben?
I'll just drop a couple of random things in. I've just got written down here, worms and baby worms.
Oh, yeah.
So we've got baby worms in this film, which is quite nice.
I quite like what was happening with them as well. Kind of made sense. Yeah, I think that worked. I think that whole part worked, really.
It's quite cool. I love the spice mining stuff. It's just a bit of an add-on topic, but the way they've done that, I think, is really good. Again, with the effects and the way they've done the styling of the imagery, you feel the weight, the mechanical nature of those machines.
Yeah.
And that would be so easy to get wrong.
Yeah.
If you go back to the 1985 film, that's also cool, but it's clearly like little tiny models wobbling around on a table. That's also fun, but this just takes it to another level. It's just like, that's how CGI should be done.
Yeah.
And it just looks really cool. Yeah.
Oh, and do you know what? Actually, one scene that surprised me, I didn't see anything about, which was actually really cool, was that opening scene, the floating Harkonnens
and the
sniper rifle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just popped into my head then. I really liked the look of that and the style and the whole...
It's just so... It's refreshing. Because if you're in, let's say, like a Marvel film, and people had suits and they could fly, it would be like to the max all the time.
And they'd be zipping around. And this.
Here they just gently take off and you're like, I can actually imagine someone inventing that suit
in
the not too distant future.
Yeah.
So it kind of grounds it a little bit.
Yeah, I'd forgotten how cool that one was.
Yeah.
Other stuff, I just want to briefly mention the Emperor.
Okay.
I would say slightly underused in this film. So Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
we weren't sure where he was going to go with it, where it was going to be like full up to 11 Christopher Walken. I don't think it was. I think it was quite subtle again. And maybe that was the right choice, but he wasn't, like, he's not in it a lot. There's a few little scenes with just him pottering about in a garden for some reason.
It felt to me that he was a bit underused, but it felt like we were in the universe now where the Emperor had had his time. You know, it felt, and that's how he seemed to come across as well. Now, I'm not sure if that was deliberate or how it was. I was a bit worried that when he was on screen, I was just going to be going, hey, it's Christopher Walken.
Yeah.
And that could be the case. But actually, do you know what? I thought it worked quite well with Florence Pugh as the new, fresh side of him. And he felt like the tired, even though he's got the power and I am the emperor, but it was like, I'm the emperor, but I just feel a bit done with this. And, you know, it could have been what it went for. It just might have been that he was tired on the days. But
yeah,
but I think it worked quite well.
Yeah, I thought it was fine.
I do think he's a lot different to the original character, the character from the original films. This will be my last reference to the original films. He feels more like an old school military general previously.
Yeah, he was a bit kind of steampunky.
Yeah.
Sort of general, wasn't he? Yeah.
Whereas this guy feels like an emperor, like a Roman emperor, who's like an old Roman emperor. This is the guy who's been in for too long. And this is why there's a need for change.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's fair. I will reference the old film one more time because I just want to mention weirding modules.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a spoiler to say what happens there, but.
I wonder if that'll be something big in the next film. Right. Who knows?
But let's say I remain slightly unsatisfied along that particular dimension at the current time.
So I think my criticisms are fairly small. I mean, maybe I felt sound like I'm talking criticisms more, but the rest of the film was so good. The bits I'm picking on aren't even like picking. They're just things that I noticed. And maybe because there's so few, I can name them quite easily, if that makes sense. You know, when we were talking about Madame Web, you kind of sit there going, oh, there's this, and this. And probably for a week later, you go, oh, what about that? I can't remember that. There's one part where Paul shouts at Jessica early on that seemed really out of place to me. I don't know. When they stood outside and they're talking. And and I can't remember what he says, but he just kind of shouts. And it's like, all right.
It's like, I'm sick of your mother.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. It's like, she's right there. You weren't looking at her when you said it. You're just kind of like shouting at the 20 other people that stood 10 yards away. It was weird, but brilliant film. I'm looking forward to watching it again, actually.
Yeah.
I'd watch it again in the cinema.
I really enjoyed it. I probably sounded like I was a bit down on it as well. I don't think I love it as much as you guys, but I thought it was a very accomplished, stunning film. And I really enjoyed it. I haven't got a grade or anything, I'm afraid.
I think what's good about the story is I'm really excited to see what happens next.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main things for me. That's probably why I want to watch it again, because I'm like, oh, I want to watch it again, get into it again. And it gives you food for thought and gives you where you start developing your own ideas and looking forward to where it goes. So, Ben, final word from you on?
I'll give it a Ford Fiesta 1.2. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not.
A Renault 5 Turbo.
Yeah. Renault 5's back again, by the way.
Is it really?
Yeah. EV Renault 5. Check it out.
Save it for your car podcast.
Yeah. That's just me talking to myself in my own head.
Yeah.
No more words. Just go. If you haven't watched it, go and watch it. It's great.
I don't think there was any trailers, was there?
No trailers.
Which was good because it was a very long film. So
it was a very long film.
It would have been there till midnight if there were trailers as well.
It's worth saying, again, back on this film, I love the way it started.
Yeah.
Pre-credits.
Yeah.
Because there weren't any trailers, but there was adverts. And then the lights went down and you were kind of waiting for trailers or something. And then there was suddenly that, it's not the men, was it the Mentats or the...
Yeah, something like that.
It was just like Giddy Primes. Yeah. It was just like suddenly this guild voice screen's black and it's like this loud guild voice kicks in and then you get the Warner Brothers logo and I was just like, that's cool. That was like almost like attention. Like everyone shut up now and watch the film.
Yeah. And not everybody in the cinema shut up. But
they were fine in the end. It was all good. Do you know what? Just on that, I know you probably want to wrap up, but this is just like Jable's ramble at the end. I haven't been to the cinema once for a long time that there hasn't been somebody talking or something happens. What is going on with it?
I was thinking earlier on, actually, I might stop going to the cinema and just start watching films on my telly because it is getting to the point where I just sit there tensely waiting for something to happen.
That's what it is. I'm just so disappointed because it feels every week I have this feeling of I'm going to have to say something at some point. Sometimes it goes away, but just to have to go in somewhere and have that feeling that you may have to do that, it's really annoying. I don't know what it is. People are too used to watching stuff on the sofa where they can sit and chat, and it's just like, stop it.
Yeah. Now, your theory, our kid, on this has always been, and I probably shouldn't say this because it will backfire on me, that the tickets are too cheap in this town. So people don't place enough value on sitting in that seat. So if tickets were like 15 quid like they are in all other cinemas, they'd be like, I better take this seriously because that's cost me like 30 quid for the two of us.
It's just that disregard for other people that I absolutely
hate. I don't get it.
So on to next week then.
Well,
there's have not you much, got something?
Yeah, I've listed a couple of things because I knew you'd be busy looking at June stuff.
Well, I've got one thing, but you go ahead.
No, you go ahead then.
Well, I've got imaginary, which seems to be somebody who left their child at home and forgot to take a teddy with them, then came back to find the teddy's turned evil or something.
I thought it was like Dr. Dead Fred or something. Oh,
no, it's a horror imaginary friend.
Oh, yeah, and I'm thinking of If. Imaginary Friend is If. I think it's a John Krasinski film or something like that. But
yeah, this isn't a kid-friendly film. This is a kind of horror-y 15 film.
Cool.
Or there's the Bob Marley film, which is still on next week. Oh, yeah. So have a think between those. Okay.
I might be in the mood for a stupid horror film.
Yeah, I might be as well.
We'll see. We'll have a look. We'll watch the trailers and see how we feel.
Yeah.
I would like to see the Bob Marley film at some point.
I would as well,
I think. Wait until telly. Probably. I can watch it quietly at home.
Well, if people want to let us know what we should be watching next week, how would they do that, our kid?
They would get us on the socials at Just So Jables on Facebook, Instagram and X. They can email us, hello@justsojables.com. Check out the website, justsojables.com/retroreels, and you'll see what's on Retro Reels.
Well, just to let you all know that Javier Bardem couldn't stand up after being crouched down for so long.
No, we couldn't see him stand up, could we?
Well, see you all next time.
Shy hallooed.
Size of a chap inch.
Just So Jables.